Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a Monday. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are live in Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, where Colin was right, where Colin was wrong. Packed today, Peter Schrager stops by this hour. All sorts of NFL stuff. Week 2 of the NFL will be over after tonight. Jimmy G playing for the 49ers. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. You know, it wasn't long ago. My wife used to be in the restaurant business, and her dad owned a restaurant for years. And so, you know, we'll play a game. We go to new restaurants all the time. You know, every month or so, we'll go to a new restaurant. And she'll be like, not going to work, going to work. And she's been great. I've joked about this before. She's never been wrong. She can tell if it's a disaster. But even I can tell sometimes, because restaurants are a public business, right? You walk in, you see the menu, you see the wait staff, you see the real estate. So it wasn't long ago. It was about 2 months ago. I walked into a restaurant with my wife. And I said within 3 minutes, I'm like, oh, this is a disaster. The menu, it said vegetarian on the menu, but they had chicken. The real estate was so large, there was no intimacy. Everything echoed. There was no urgency for the wait staff. You could just walk in. They had a corner lot, so there was too much sun in the building, so it was hot, and their air conditioning wasn't good enough. And again, they had vegetarian on the plastered all over the menu, but there was chicken all over the menu. So I told my wife, I'm like, you know, I'm not a restaurateur, but they don't have any direction. She's like, yeah, this will be out of service here in the next couple of months, depending on how much money dad gave the kids. And sure enough, a couple months in, it was done. The NFL, similarly, is a public business. You can watch practices. You watch games. You watch the press conferences. You can see the uniforms. You know, they may do things behind the scenes, but there's so much analyzation now. Twitter, social media, cable TV. You can break down even what they're doing in rooms you can't see with film. The Raiders are a poorly run restaurant. I mean, think about this thing. So John Gruden takes it over and immediately gets rid of two very highly productive and low maintenance stars. Khalil Mack's never in trouble. Amari Cooper's perfect. He's the opposite of a diva receiver. They get rid of stars. So the message from the restaurant is, we do not have star dishes. Then they go out and get Antonio Brown. What are you telling me as a locker room? What are you telling me as a player, as a coach, as a scout, as a consumer, as a fan? Then they say, high character matters. So they go in the NFL draft and they actually reach for about three players. Good players, not great. They overdrafted them. But they told us it was due to character. Then maybe you shouldn't acquire Vontaze Burfict and Richie Incognito. They don't know what they're doing. You know what this feels like? It feels like they gave power to a guy that had been out of the league for 10 years. And when he wakes up in the morning, some have said this about our current president, whatever mood he's in, that's what he's doing. That's what John Gruden's doing. He didn't like stars, A-B. Do some homework. I mean, make a few calls. When you're out of the league 10 years, I understand you lose some of your sources, but all you had to do was make a couple of calls. I said 2 weeks ago, I called a buddy of mine who knew Mike Tomlin. I made one call. My buddy's like, I called Tomlin. He said it was a circus. You couldn't make a call on that? Mike Mayock had been out of the league, breaking down film perhaps, but out of the league. This is the danger to giving unlimited power to somebody that's been out of a business for a decade. They don't have the sourcing. They don't have the connections they used to. You can break down film. You can be Mike Mayock. You can be John Gruden. But anybody in this league that did their homework didn't want AB. It wasn't like he had a lot of teams acquiring for him. So, and the other thing, even that offensive lineman we haven't talked about, the Trent Brown contract, they didn't know what they were doing. They bring him in, they make him the highest paid offensive lineman in NFL history. And then they move him to right tackle. This is a hard cap league. We can all blame AB on this, but AB has become TO. You know, small school guy, he's kind of volatile and anti-authority. All right, you're not going to get him to change his personality. I mean, at this age, you're not going to get me to change my personality. Listen, players are what they are. Most of our personalities, if you go to a therapist or a psychologist, are formed by about 12 years old, maybe earlier. You're not going to change them. Football coaches aren't therapists. So you can blame AB all you want, but I wouldn't have acquired him because I wouldn't be able to deal as a football coach. I'm not Fraser Crane. I'm not Dr. Laura. I'm not a trained therapist. This isn't what I do. So I would not get volatile anti-authority players. By the way, I've worked with anti-authority people. They usually leave the business and go on and open their own business. It's the way there's a lot of room in America for the anti-authority figure. The artist, the musician, the individual small business owner. I've had a lot of friends. They always say, I couldn't work in corporate America. I couldn't do it. It's too regimented. I couldn't do it. I've got good friends like that, so they don't get into it. But as long as AB can't own his own league, then you have to be very aware of what he is. They didn't do their homework. This is what happens when you hire people outside of a business, maybe on the periphery of it. They don't have the sources. Gruden wields too much power. He wakes up in the morning and says, AB, I like him. What? This is the restaurant that you walk in. The menu doesn't make sense. There's no urgency by the wait staff. It's a public business. It is very easy to see. I don't even know if Mike Mayock's on the same page with John Gruden. Feels like now he's kind of cleaning up some of his mess, but he had a very, you don't see GMs in the NFL do this. He called a impromptu presser yesterday on the AB helmet issue.
AB is not here today, right? So here's the bottom line. He's upset about the helmet issue. We have supported that. We appreciate that. Okay, but at this point, we've pretty much exhausted all avenues of relief. So from our perspective, it's time for him to be all in. We're all out.
You can blame the NFL on the helmet issue. You can blame AB. You can blame his agent. Blame whoever you want. But he is now an Oakland Raider because of a coach who has too much power, who was out of the league for a decade, just on the periphery, that didn't do his homework and makes it up every morning when he goes to work. They're just making stuff up. It's not the way to do business. Let me shift to this. Jerry Jones is toying a little bit with Zeke. Tony Pollard's great. Alfred Morris, Hall of Famer. They're toying with Zeke a lot publicly. Stephen Jones, Jerry Jones, kind of a tag team thing. They're kind of prodding Zeke, poking Zeke. They're not with Dak. It should be noted, they are not with Dak. And I think this is of the utmost respect to Dak. I think they respect Dak as a kid. They respect him as a player. Jerry Jones said this weekend, and he holds him in much higher esteem than most of us do.
A lot of people question whether Dak was one of those guys that need to be in the top tier. I've never questioned that. Okay. I don't think that there's any doubt that he's in the top level of the paid quarterbacks. There's no question in my mind about that. Now, how do we make this all fit? And what can we do to have the best team around him? That's what we are trying to work on.
Now, think about this. So with Zeke, who is the best player maybe in the NFL as position, Jerry is going out publicly saying, you know, I love Tony Pollard. I have been saying this for years. Alfred Morris, get you to a Super Bowl. But with Dak, who most of us thinks around middle of the pack, it is Jerry coming out and saying, oh, I think the world of him. I think he's amazing. I think he's fantastic. What does that tell you? It tells you ultimately that Jerry is making this decision on Dak and Zeke. He feels he can get to Zeke. He'll cave to the pressure. He's not in love with what he's doing. What it tells you is Jerry's appreciative of Dak. Do I think Dak's a great quarterback? No. Here's the way I would look at it. Much like the Raiders in the restaurant example, every time there's a quarterback contract that is signed in recent years that we all kind of feel, that's a little much. You, the public, me, the media guy, we're generally right. We didn't like Ryan Fitzpatrick Buffalo contract. We're like, that doesn't seem... Joe Flacco after the Super Bowl. Kirk Cousins. We didn't like any of those contracts. We were like, they can win games, but we were all right. Generally with contracts to quarterbacks, your gut feeling is right. It is. Again, it's a public business. But here's the thing with Dak and Jerry. there's two kind of contracts you can sign, whether it's you're signing a quarterback or you're buying a house with your wife or your husband. There's the pump the fist contract. We stole the house. We're going to make a fortune on this house. We got the house right next to the school for our kids. I've had a couple of those in my life, real estate transactions, where I literally, you sign it, you walk out of the title company with your wife, and you're like, it's a pump the fist contract. We nailed this. We got the condo. We got the timeshare. We got the house. We got the car. You feel like you got a great deal. Okay, that's not what this is. This is the kind of contract you sign, and as you're driving home, got the keys to the new house, you're telling your wife and she's telling you, listen, we'll make it work. We'll make it work. It's close enough to the school. The house needs some work, but you know what? I'm going to work weekends and we're going to fix this kitchen. Not every quarterback contract is a pump your fist deal. Matt Stafford signed with the Lions years ago. I said I would have paid him. It wasn't a, yeah, we got Matt Stafford for a song. Listen, Jimmy Garoppolo was not a pump your fist contract. You paid him $27.5 million. He couldn't stay healthy. There are pump your fist contracts, and then there are those that you're like, we're going to make it work. We're going to get Jimmy G a better offensive line. We're going to get him some weapons. We're going to make it work. And that's what this contract's going to be. Jay Glazer said this morning, I'm reading his mailbag on The Athletic. Listen, it's going to be the $32 to $33 million deal, and it's going to happen. So that's okay. You can win a lot of games with make-it-work contracts. I think Dak's ceiling's lower. I think you're going to have to let go of maybe a great corner or a great linebacker. But this is not a we stole him. They've been doing that in New England with Tom Brady's contract. They did that at the end with Tim Duncan's contract. Seattle, by the way, is not pumping their fist on Russell Wilson's contract. It's a Pete Carroll and John Snyder go, okay, we're going to have to trade off some things. We're going to make it work contract. That's where Dallas is today.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Also tonight, San Francisco 49ers play Denver. Jimmy Garoppolo, returning from his ACL injury, will play. Now, he got paid based on projection over production. It happens. Used to be in the NFL, the top quarterback, like a Jamarcus Russell, the number one pick, would get a fortune on projection, not production. The NFL owners hated it and changed it in the CBA. But it happens from time to time. You get kind of trapped. You have to pay a guy based on projection, not production. It's not what you'd like to do in any business, but it happens. He was 5-0 down the stretch in Week 17. Then he got hurt week three last year. Here's what I'd say about Jimmy G. There is this narrative out there that, oh my gosh, what if it doesn't work? San Francisco's a great example of spot a quarterback you like, pay him early. Because even if Jimmy G got hurt in week 12, let's say he gets hurt again. By the way, I'm showing you a video. He's got a brace. You do realize now, right? They can get rid of him, and they only have a $4 million dead money cap hit next year because they spotted him early and they paid him. This is the opposite of the Cowboys who waited, waited, and waited, and waited. Part of being an NFL GM is spotting talent and saying, okay, let's, at the quarterback position at least, let's get him paid. So this is a prime example. There is this feeling that San Francisco, oh my Lord, they are in crisis if they're only paying him $27.5 million now. Isn't that funny how 2 years after the contract, you're like, God, if he goes 9-7, 10-6, you almost feel like you're getting a bargain. That's not that much more than average guys make. By the way, the Colts did this with Andrew Luck. They paid him a bunch of money. Andrew Luck's now making like $27.5 million, $28 million. That feels like a bargain. So if the San Francisco 49ers go 9-7, $27.5 million for Jimmy G turning around that franchise does not feel like, by any stretch, you're having to sacrifice stuff. Secondly, if he does get hurt, you move off him. Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch aren't going anywhere. They got six-year contracts guaranteed. They're not going anywhere. Jimmy Garoppolo may be going somewhere if he gets hurt again. But if he gets hurt, they've only got one more year of dead cap money, and it's not a huge hit. So it's a great example of spot your quarterback This is why you have scouts and make a determination. By the way, San Francisco made a determination on this kid when they made the deal for a second round pick. They knew at that point they'd done their homework. We just want to see the guy get some reps in our offense. He did. Boom, pay him. And we're all like, whoa, 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 whoa. It's $27.5 million. Only one more year. I mean, if he was, there's three great quarterbacks in college next year. So if Garoppolo got hurt early this year, you're a bottom five team in the league. By the way, you're going to get one of the quarterbacks. So I don't think San Francisco's in a precarious spot. I don't. I think, cross your fingers, he's healthy and it works out. But I think when you pay quarterbacks early like Garoppolo, you wake up about 2 years later and you're like, you know what? It's not a terrible deal. When Patrick Mahomes signs for $38 million a year and Carson Wentz is making 32 and leading you to the NFC Championship, 32 is going to – when Dak makes 34, 32 and a half for Carson Wentz is going to feel like a bargain.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Good stuff. All right, Mondays, Colin right, Colin wrong. A lot of them this week. Here we go.
Where Colin was right.
Well, we said Jerry Jones, this is very shrewd. They're putting pressure on Zeke. They're going public. The tag team partner, no, it's a law firm, Stephen and Jerry Jones. Once again this weekend, after Tony Pollard had a nice showing, Jerry, and he's doing this on purpose, not doing it with Dak, but he's doing it with Zeke, took a little shot at him.
Is Pollard your best negotiator with Zeke?
Who?
Pollard.
Now, Zeke could.
He's got your camera.
He got your camera. We're having some fun.
Put it to the
side at your expense.
Yep, very public, very clear. They're not doing this by accident. It's what we thought they would do. With Dak, it's done behind the scenes. With Zeke, they're making it public, currying favor with the fan base and the media, and so far it's working. The pressure now is on Zeke.
Where Colin was wrong.
I think the Colts are a well-run organization. I don't like all the mystery with Andrew Luck. First the owner comes out and talks about it, then the GM comes out, and now we have Frank Reich coming out and saying it's up to Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck, of course, is not talking. This is a well-run organization. They draft well. They spend frugally and smartly, but there's a lot of mystery here. And, you know, I understand the NFL is a covert league. You don't want to make stuff public, but I can't be the only person that watches this and is confused by all of it. Maybe it's about Jim Irsay being too impulsive as an owner, talk less, own more. But I just don't like the way it's been handled. But why I really do think it's a great organization, I don't love this spot.
Where Colin was right.
One of the reasons we supported the Steelers moving on with Antonio Brown, because they've shown a history that when it comes to linebackers and wide receivers, they just draft well, coach well, and figure it out. And the Steelers wide receivers have looked unbelievable in preseason. James Washington had another big weekend. I mean, he is clearly, last year he was a second round pick. He was a wildly talented kid from Oklahoma State, but with AB and Juju Smith-Schuster, he just didn't get a lot of looks. He's getting looks, and he looks fantastic. Devin Bush looks great at linebacker. Since 2002, the Steelers have drafted 8 legitimate high-end wide receivers. A couple are superstars. So if you feel you are very good at either drafting or accumulating certain positions, that gives you the power to move off talented people like AB. It's what we predicted, and it's what's happened.
Where Colin was wrong.
I didn't love the Giants picking Daniel Jones at number 6. I watched him at college 4 or 5 times, maybe more, and I thought, just a guy, don't love his arm strength. He still doesn't have a great arm. I think he's looked terrific in the preseason. Daniel Jones from Duke completed 84% of his throws. Two touchdowns, no picks, 151 passer rating, 16 completions, 19 throws. Listen, he's not a big arm guy. He's more athletic than Eli Manning. But what I do like, and I felt this when Dak came into the league in the preseason, total poise, plays with a good tempo. They've run a lot of timing stuff and underneath stuff, but he looks very, very confident in total control, pinpoint accuracy. You know, again, these are a lot of vanilla schemes, but when you're asked to make timing throws and you make almost all of them perfectly, you deserve credit. And I think, and again, the Giants, I will say, have upgraded quietly their offensive line in the last 2 years. So Daniel Jones, if he does play, is going to have time to throw, and with a star running back and with an emerging star at tight end, Jones looks like an interesting pick at number six.
Where Colin was right.
Tennessee quarterback Marcus Mariota, never been a huge fan, may lose his starting job to Ryan Tannehill. Here was always my knock on Marcus Mariota. I've said this before. Quarterback is the most verbal position probably in American sports. I did a 15-minute interview with him years ago on tape. We got about 4.5 minutes. He is so quiet. He is so nonverbal. And I don't think he communicates great. I think he's too reliant on running in the red zone, and he appears to be a little bit brittle. I don't think he always sees the field particularly well. He's in his fifth year, and I don't feel like it's his team, and it should be. By the way, last year, and he was a lesser version of Andy Dalton. He had, in 13 games, 11 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. You know, there's just something to be said about kind of being the guy that walks into a room and owns it. And I've always felt he's a great kid, but he's sort of slight. I don't think he has an own-the-room personality. I don't think he's a great communicator. He's nonverbal at a verbal position. And he is struggling to stave off Ryan Tannehill this camp.
Where Colin was right.
LeBron has, it was revealed, 70 million more followers on social media than any other NBA player. Steph, that's a lot. Steph is the only one in his ballpark. Listen, the idea that this league and the parody and the Western Conference and there's two stars everywhere. The Eastern Conference and the NBA commissioner just changed the time of their games because LeBron, since he's left the East, the ratings went into the tank. This is still a very LeBron-dependent league. He is still by far and away the most discussable, connectable NBA player. By the way, Tiger had this in golf. Michael had it with the Bulls. But whenever I hear, oh, I can't wait to watch the parody, and I can't. Well, the Eastern Conference last year had tons of parody and nobody watched. The bottom line is LeBron is, and this is the downside to being a star-driven sport, is way more important to the NBA than even NBA fans, media, maybe the commish does know it, would like to admit.
Where Colin was wrong.
I've been ripping the Phillies. I don't like 12-year contracts. I think it puts way too much pressure on power hitters when you sign them to $300 million contracts. You can sign a pitcher to a big deal. You can sign a contact hitter, a base stealer. When you sign a power hitter to a massive deal, they got to go to the yard every day thinking they need 50 bombs and 130 RBIs. And Bryce Harper struggled. Until now, he has caught fire, 4 home runs, last 5 games. Phillies now inching back into contention for a wild card spot. And he had the play of the year in baseball this weekend against the Cubs.
2-2 with the bases loaded and one out.
Oh my God.
Deep to right field, way up there, and way out of here. Second deck walk-off home run. Grand slam, Bryce Harper. Wow! The Phillies have come from behind to win it 7-5.
By the way, 26 jacks, 90 RBI. First of all, Bryce is a good kid. There is something in baseball. Will he get in trouble for running the bases too fast? He used to get in trouble for not running them fast enough. Is there a code against sprinting around the bases?
I'm sure someone will find a problem with something that he's doing.
Let him go. That's like a little league kid after a game-winning hit.
I mean, that's what you play for.
That's great. Don't get many of those in the life. Little league on, you don't get many of those. Great moment.
Where Colin was right.
Sam Darnold with Adam Gase looks fantastic. I'm always amazed by this. Listen, just go to the metrics and data. Adam Gase had a winning record in Miami when Ryan Tannehill played. Of course Sam Darnold, a young quarterback, is going to be better with him than Todd Bowles, a defensive coach. you can do marginal homework. I watch Miami a lot because I watch Patriot games. They beat Belichick twice. They were very multiple, very clever. Of course, they had massive chaos in Miami. But it's not a shock at all. When Adam Gase got hired, I said, okay, this is going to work. This is what you got to do. You got to get young quarterbacks, offensive-minded guys, and hopefully they've got a little bit of head coaching experience. For everybody in Cleveland that just loves Freddie Kitchens, he's never coached an NFL game. Adam Gase coached for 4 years, beat Belichick twice, and when Tannehill started, they had a winning record. Gase and Darnold looked like a perfect fit.
Where Colin was right,
I had my reservations about Cliff Kingsbury in Arizona. He wasn't just a college coach. He was a baby college coach. He feels more cheekbones than playbook. Than chalkboard. Is they look a little lost to me. I didn't love hiring Vance Joseph, who's never had a top 10 defense. I think they've got all sorts of issues in the front office. They've been had some bad PR situations, had another one about a week ago. Listen, if you can't win at your alma mater, where your boosters, your alumni, your executives are all completely behind this hunky alma mater quarterback. Mike Leach won there. Didn't Sonny Dykes win there as well? Listen, he's the only coach in the last 10 years not winning there. I have my reservations about it, and I think of all the teams I've watched so far in the preseason, they look the most disjointed.
Where Colin was right?
I've been saying this for years. Tom Brady appears to be getting younger. The New England Patriots press guide was released this weekend, and Brady is listed at 22 years old. So he officially is actually getting younger. Yes, somebody screwed up in the media guide, and Brady is 22 years old. So he is officially getting younger.
That's remarkable, actually.
Here's the pictures. Watch this, Joy. Sorry for a radio audience. Don't watch this. Sorry, radio audience.
We're watching Tom Brady's face morph throughout his career, radio audience.
I will say this. If you remain thin, it does make you look younger.
Well, I mean, he also eats very well. If you eat well and you
think that
hydrate and
that
take
matters?
Care of your skin and do all those things that, you know, people consider to be extra, you will preserve your body longer.
Now he's officially 22 now.
Well, yeah.
It says it right there on paper.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Well, Drew Rosenhaus has been doing this for a long time. He is a sports agent and owns Rosenhaus Sports, T.O., Gronk, Antonio Brown. He has never been afraid to represent big personalities. He deals with them deftly and easily. Doesn't mean coaches do. And Drew is joining us on the phone. Let's start with this. Drew, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it today.
You bet, Colin. Good to be on with you.
Okay, you deal in big personalities. You have the DNA for it. Some people can do it. Some agents can't. Are you concerned that you may deal with AB very well? You're very nimble with this. But a new GM and a new coach in Gruden, who's been out of the sport for a decade, may not deal with his personality. Does that concern you at all?
Oh, not at all. I don't think AB is difficult to deal with whatsoever. I can tell you this is really more a byproduct of him just wanting to have the right safety equipment that he's worn his entire career. And this is not about AB and the Raiders as much as it is about Antonio and the league and the union and a new helmet policy that they have. You know, the policy was put in place recently. This is the first year where players are prohibited from wearing helmets that are not approved by the NFL. This really has caught us and the Raiders in kind of in the middle of a bigger discussion. This is bigger than the Raiders and Antonio. This is really about Antonio's safety and his health on and off the football field moving forward.
But Mike Mayock yesterday held a press conference, and it felt like to me, Drew, it was an ultimatum press conference. Did it not feel like that to you?
Well, you know, I didn't pay a lot of attention in the press conference because I talked to Mike four or five times. I understand where the Raiders are coming from. They traded to get Antonio. They're counting on him. He's, you know, without a doubt, one of the best players in the National Football League. They want him to be able to focus on football and not be distracted by his equipment. But, you know, unfortunately, that's the reality of the situation. It's not the Raiders' fault. It's not Antonio's fault. Antonio is one of the few guys that has worn the same helmet through college and the NFL and feels it keeps him safe. And he's had a remarkable durability through the nine ultra-productive years he's had, and he doesn't see any reason to change it. Now the league and the union do, and I respect their wishes to make players safer with helmets, but this helmet has worked very well for Antonio, and he is going to continue to lobby to wear it and look at every possibility. But he was back with the team today. I anticipate he will moving forward as we try to find a permanent resolution to this issue.
Drew, the NFL is in a situation where over the last 5 years, they've been very fluid. They change rules, regulations, equipment regularly due to maybe it's CTE, maybe it's the growing concern about health. You know this. They don't practice as much. They don't hit as much. So it's a very fluid situation, and they're going to ban this helmet, and they're not going to give them an option. Are you concerned at all there will be no resolution, and AB just won't play with this required helmet?
I don't think that is a real possibility.
You don't.
I have confidence in our ability, myself, Antonio, the group that I work with, the Raiders, the NFL, and the union to come up with something that makes sense so that Antonio can continue playing football with comfortability, with the fact that he feels that he's safe. That's really all that we're looking for right now. And I'm confident, Colin, that we'll find that piece.
AB, I compared him. I said there's a little T.O. At times he can feel a little anti-authority in Pittsburgh with Big Ben, now with the NFL. You know, you deal with personalities all the time like this. Do you feel that T.O. and AB do share some similarities in personality, anti-authority?
I really don't, and I'm not a big fan, Colin, of comparing players and personalities. You know, just talking about AB and, you know, who he is, he's a guy that loves the game, is a remarkable competitor. He's excited about playing this season. We're just dealing right now with a helmet issue that's very different than what happened with the Pittsburgh Steelers, which was more of a deterioration of a nine-year career with them. He played his entire career with the Steelers, 9 years. And it was a wonderful career. But, it, you know, like anything else, all good things come to an end.
All right. So Drew Rosenhaus is joining us. How are his feet, by the way? Because that's been sort of overshadowed over the last, I would say, 4 to 5 days. How are his feet?
I think his feet are doing well. He's definitely getting there. I think it's a matter of time until he's fully cleared in that capacity. I would expect he'd be healthy by the end of the preseason.
All right. So you said he's back. He was back with the Raiders today. Do you think we're closer or further from resolution today than yesterday?
I think we're closer to resolution than we were yesterday.
All right. Drew Rosenhaus.